Hey, it's JD here, and I just wanted to throw something down, somewhat of a challenge to all you musically inclined folks out there. We are going to be doing a pod list again this year, and a pod list is simply a podcast playlist. It's a pod list. The previous four pod lists have consisted of talented members of our Pavement community submitting songs that they have covered from the Pavement oeuvre. Pavement adjacent songs are also welcome, so you could do PSOI, you could do Jix, you could do Malcolm is Solo. Anything is fair game, truly. So get your band together or grab an acoustic guitar and just play your fucking guts out. From there, submit the song to me by email, and we'll go from there. So please, submit those songs, jd@meetingmalcolmists.com, or even better, use wetransfer.com if it's a big WAV file. And WAV files are what I prefer. That will work out just magnificently. That's what she said. Podlist 5 coming July 8th. So get those songs in and be a part of something special. Thanks so much. Now, on with the show.
Previously on the Pavement Top 50.
What do you have to say, Dan from Rochester, about Pueblo?
Oh, man. So, first of all, when I listened to this a lot this week, and there's three versions. So I did some deep diving into comparing the different studio versions that are out there. But the first thing that surprised me was the length is relatively short. It's slightly less than 3.5 minutes. And to me, that song always felt like very epic.
Hey, this is Westy from the rock and roll band Pavement, and you're listening to The Countdown.
Hey, it's JD here, back for another episode of our Top 50 Countdown for the seminal indie rock band Pavement. Week over week, we're going to count down the 50 essential Pavement tracks that you selected with your very own Top 20 ballots. I then tabulated the results using an abacus and a six-pack. Okay, there were only four left, but I was thirsty. How will your favorite Pavement song fare in the ranking? You'll need to tune in to find out. So there's that. This week, we're joined by Pavement superfan, Daniel. Daniel, how are you doing, motherfucker?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm excellent today. It's a bright and sunny day out. I did a 10K walk. It's just fantastic.
It is a good day. It's like I'm in Chicago and it's 50 degrees, and so that's like summer. So
yeah. Right, to have that in February is like just another planet.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so let's get right into this. Let's talk about your Pavement origin story, Daniel. Ooh. From Chicago.
I am from a town in the South called Montgomery, Alabama.
Okay.
And I'm also 45, late Gen Xer. Discovering music in the early 90s, you really had to try to search out cool stuff, and especially in a shitty town like Montgomery, Alabama. There were like only one record store that was independent, and you kind of had to like know a person to get there. And so that's a big part of my origin story, is I am from a shitty place. And the more I get to know Pavement, I realize that Stockton is a lot like Montgomery. It's strip malls and crime and not a lot to do, not a lot of real culture. So I see that connection now. When I was a teenager, I was into classic rock, like Neil Young and Bob Dylan and Steve Miller Band, I guess, was my intro to what my dad showed me about rock and roll. But I started 10th grade, and I noticed a guy had the iconic Pavement Sunny Side Up shirt.
Right.
And I said, this guy knows something. He kind of shined with this aura And I, at the time, I didn't know much about indie rock or alternative rock, but I knew a lot about film. I was into like Tarantino, and that led me to like John Woo and other independent film. I knew a lot about like beat literature, like Kerouac and Ginsberg, Burroughs. So we met, and he helped me with The Pavement and The Sonic Youth. We traded CDs. I traded VHS independent film with him. And we eventually started a shitty like noise band in his garage.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah. And we talked about Pavement and Sonic Youth, Daydream Nation. At the time, I think Crooked Rain was the big one, and Wowie was pretty big on our playlist. But I'm really thankful for that meeting, and his taste was just beyond anything of people from Montgomery. So that's my story, and I continue to love Pavement my entire life. It's been my favorite band, and I felt very special having them as a part of my life. And I'm not sure who it was that said, I think it might be Mark Arm from Mudhunt Honey said, when you listen to Pavement, you feel smarter.
Oh, wow.
And I feel like I'm in on some kind of secret.
Yeah.
And I feel like enlightened when I listen to Stephen Malkmus and his poetry and his lyrics. I feel smarter. And and coming from a place of like education was not valued and no culture, it meant a lot for me to like have Pavement as this kind of avant-garde art band that led me to different bigger cities and bigger ideas. So
what was, take me through your experience, Daniel. Take me through that. So you saw him wearing the Sunny Side Up shirt. What was the first spin like? Like, what did you spin first, if you remember?
I remember.
And what was going on in your head when you heard it?
I got Crooked Rain first. And I remember the disc. And people these days miss out on the artwork of the disc.
Right.
It's got that layer of like kind of a red and maroon art. And I spun it and I was like, first off, I've never heard a vocalist sound like this before.
Right.
And I was like, is he singing or is he like speaking? And there in the liner notes, there's a picture of like a singer, but I always thought it was that was Malkmus or that was Spiral Stairs. I wasn't sure, but it turns out it's like just a random collage. I wasn't sure if the singer was playing guitar or was just like singing.
Wow.
It felt like something from a different world completely. And unlike any music that I've, ever encountered even since, it's now I can kind of associate what Malkmus was doing with like Lou Reed.
Yes, and big time.
But at the time it was just like, what is this vocalist doing? And then there were parts of the guitar playing, it was like kind of dissonant guitar, and I was like, are these guitars even in tune? Like it sounds like noise in some parts,
but so melodic in others,
and so melodic in others, and that's their secret.
Yeah.
And then I started listening to the lyrics. The first song that comes to mind, I wrote on my we used to have book covers, a paper to cover the book. I wrote the entire lyrics for Stop Breathing. This is like the most poetic, I don't know what he's talking about, but I was also, I went to an art high school, and I was in creative writing, and I would do my best to try to emulate in my poetry what Malkmus was doing with like his prose or his lyrics.
Right. Okay.
So, he was talking about, I think, stuff around a father-son relationship in that song. And I had struggles with my dad, and as we all probably do.
Sure.
And I was like, abstractly, he's talking about stuff that is really hitting home. And so there were some songs I didn't get at first, like, but yeah, we'll talk about some of that stuff later.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So that was your first experience with them, and Crooked Rain, what a great jumping off point. And just to follow up on, you know, like who's playing what and what are they doing? It wasn't like you could tune into MTV at the time and see a great deal of Pavement, you know, and sort of match it up like you could with other bands. You know, in this case, they were so rarefied. It would be tough to get your hands on, you know, live footage or anything like that. So that leads me to my next question. When did you see them live? Did you see them live?
First, my first concert by them was, it must have been early my first semester at Auburn University. I went, started 97. I went to Birmingham, Alabama at a place called The Nick. I think that's what it is. And so it must have been September or October of 1997. And it was like maybe 100, 200 person venue. It was a very small venue. And me and my two friends from Auburn, we like got there nerdy super early and waited at the big, like the rail of the front row. And it turns out that we were like right across from Spiral Stairs guitar setup.
Okay.
And it was in support of Right in the Corners.
Oh.
So amazing show. I think at the time, what they were doing was they were playing about 15 songs with an encore of 3 songs, and they played Creedence. Sinister Purpose was their cover that they played. And they had their set list on paper plates, which I thought was very DIY and cool.
Yeah.
And Spiral at the end of the set, he picked up his paper plate, threw it like a frisbee, and I caught it. So
oh,
I had
wow.
the set list. I don't have it anymore. But
oh, damn.
One time it was in my dorm. It was in a collection as I moved around the country.
Of course, of course.
But I wish tough I had that stuff. Amazing moment. Probably, I would say it's probably my third or fourth concert ever. I went to REM and Radiohead in support of Monster. That was my first. So it's in good company.
Yeah, I bet. So how did you find like-minded people in uni? Like, was it easy, or, you know, did you have to seek them out like you did in high school, or how did you find your compatriots to go to that show with?
This was so funny. The first day of English class, the teacher asked, what are we like, and get to know you icebreaker questions. And me and this guy, Cleve, we both put the same bands. We really liked Pavement, number one, Lemonheads, number two, REM, number three. We wrote those identically.
Wow.
And it's like this serendipitous kind of thing happened with us, and we became very close friends. And at the time, he was like really into Pink Floyd, and I said, hey man, you got to get really back into Pavement's better than Pink Floyd. So we obsess over our mutual love of Malkmus and Pavement. So that's how that connection happened. But other times in my life, I've never really found someone who says Pavement's my favorite band. And maybe you're my, probably my like third person. They always seem to be like a French band. No one is like so obsessed like I am, or possibly you are. And that's okay with me. Like,
yeah,
this is something, it's very special kind of in this time where everything feels like homogenized. I'm glad that this is a special thing for a few of us. So,
yeah, I think so too. We can unite in that, unite in our solodom, in our solitude. What's your go-to record these days?
Well, it's grown. It's changed over time.
Of course.
As it should, probably. I think the most bang for your buck and artistic expression of what they represent is Wowie Zowie.
Sure. Yeah, I
like,
can get
behind that. It is their version of the White Album.
Yeah.
In that it is like so many different kind of genre attempts, and it feels loose. It feels fun. It's thematically all over the place.
Yeah.
And it just feels like a real expression of what they were going for as a band.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's like the best album, but for me, I think it feels like Pavement and what they wanted. And the go-to for me, I hope it makes your list, is Grave Architecture.
Okay.
I find that to be quintessential a Pavement song. But yeah, it's just so all over the place and wacky that I love it.
What do you say we take a quick break and we come back on the other side of track number 38?
Sounds good.
All right, cool.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey, this is Bob Nastanovich from Pavement. Thanks for listening. And now on with a countdown.
38. All right. Track 38 is Date with IKEA, the first spiral jam on the countdown. It's the fifth from Pavement's fourth record, Brighten the Corners, after Blue Hawaiian at 50, Embassy Row at 44, Old to Begin at 43, and Starlings of the Slipstream at 40. Without further ado, number 38, Date with IKEA. Daniel from Chicago.
Hey.
Talk to me about your experience with this song.
Well, it was the first Pavement album that I was able to buy on its release date. So it has a special place. It was released, I think it's April 17th, 1997. And I went to my local mall and walked in and bought this album. And it's a banger. It's a really fucking good album.
I agree. And 100%.
It rocks. And this song is a rocker. And you feel like there's some shimmering layered guitar going on.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the song's about.
No, it feels tough to discern.
At the time, I didn't know what a IKEA was. Now I know I think it's a Norwegian furniture store, wholesale furniture. I think I know what the meaning of the song is, because I've had a date with IKEA. I bought a house and I've had to go to IKEA to celebrate needing furniture. And I remember going to IKEA going, oh, this is what the song is about. Maybe domestication. Maybe it's a union.
But I like the lyrics, domestication. Yeah.
Yeah. But the lyrics are about a relationship strife. The actress is always breaking things. That made me think something's going wrong in the relationship, or he's annoyed with his partner. Not sure, but Spiral songs have always had their own feel to them.
Yeah.
And this feels like a quintessential, Spiral Stairs song. Not what else does it sound like in those years? Maybe, like Superchunk, like No Pocky for Kitty. I don't know if you know of any other bands it might sound like, but.
No, because it's tough, because his cuts sort of stand alone on a Pavement record because they're so radically different than the stuff that SM does, right?
I think that's what I'm trying to get at, yeah.
But lyrically, you can go down the same bottomless pit with both of their lyrics. I think Malk tends to be, he's got the turn of phrase, right? He's got the gift for a turn of phrase in a way that Spiral doesn't necessarily have the same horsepower at this stage in the game. If you listen to PSOI,
yeah,
like that first record, All This Sounds Gas. Man, is he firing on all cylinders on that record. That is,
I think so.
That is prime beef. And I love it. His two outings on Brighten the Corners are both, you know, I think they're both a great jumping off point for what you need to get from Spiral. That's just my take.
I think you're right. The idea that it can be on the same album and feel so different.
Right.
And I'm okay with that.
Sort of their secret weapon. Sort of their secret weapon in a way, right?
I think so. I'm in a lot of ways, I'm not sure Spiral's influence on what Malkmus does. That's kind of a mystery. I believe it showed up more on probably Slanted and the early stuff.
Yeah, the EPs off the top. I think they were much more collaborative.
But I'm liking what I hear. This is a rocker. This feels like it's got the almost like a classic rock feel to it. Of maybe yeah. Tom Petty in there and the Heartbreakers. Oh, I can see that. But
got the sing along chorus.
Yeah, here's the a weird thing about the Spiral stuff. When I would go to the shows, the crowd would cheer so much for Spiral. It was almost like we were rooting for this underdog. And when Spiral was playing his cuts, like Malkmus would, it seemed like he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. He wouldn't have a guitar part to it. He would just kind of like pantomime playing guitar. But I noticed how much the crowd would get behind like Spiral's chance to shine. So,
did you happen to see any dates on the most recent tour in 2022?
I did. I saw one at the Chicago.
Okay. I found that Steve was much more on board with the Spiral stuff. If for lack of a better term, if he wasn't on board in the earlier years, and I don't know that, I'm prescribing that on him. I shouldn't, but I sort of am. And I just feel like they were much more cohesive, like band-wise, this time out.
I saw the same thing, and I think I read in interviews where Malkmus before had seemed kind of apprehensive to put his ball in the Pavement court, per se. He was very much on board with being a band that was reuniting and good vibes in general.
Yeah.
But at the time, I think what you notice about Bright in the Corners is, oh, he's starting to get his own voice, Malkmus.
Right.
And it has to feel daunting to have other people in the band wanting to collaborate when you're like really finding your groove.
Yeah.
So with Wowie, there's I think maybe one Spiral cut, Brighton 2, but then with Terror 0, you're starting to see Malkmus is realizing that I have something to say and I want it to be this singular vision. That's just my take. I add a lot of meaning and interpretation that might not be there.
No, that's what we do with our favorite bands, right?
They give us that to sort of interpret. But I feel like Malkmus really was hitting his groove, and maybe Spiral was hitting his groove as well. And they just it was a sign that they needed to take some time off.
Hey, listen, I don't want to make this comparison too apt, but it's interesting to me that having watched the Beatles documentary, George is shut out of that song, and then he immediately rips off All Things Must Pass, which is a double record, which just shows like how he had all these songs in the bag. And it's like, how did John and Paul not include any of his stuff on Let It Be? And then, you know, 40 years later or 30 years later, you have Terror Twilight, which I think is sorely lacking a Spiral song. Like, I think that there's part of that record that, you know, because a lot of people, it's their number five. And I think it's their number five because it doesn't sound like a Pavement record necessarily. It sounds lush and they're, you know, like rich production wise. It's a beta. I continue to call it a beta test for Steve's first solo record. It's just interesting to me that it's lacking this something, and I think that something is a Spiral gem.
You might be onto something with that.
Yeah,
and I'm while I'm glad they both had great solo careers, it's sort of missing something.
Yeah. So where do you think in terms of the ranking? This comes in at 38. What do you think? Is it properly rated? Is it overrated? Is it underrated?
I'm a little, I've been thinking about this. I think it might be overrated. If you would have asked me in 1997, I would have said it should be up there in the 30s. I don't think this has aged for me as well as
interesting.
It should have. I don't know. Nowadays, I listen to Brighton and I go, what's the song 3 on there?
You had to ask me that. Uncool and underqualified is who I am. I don't have that stuff at my fingertips.
No, I've got this. So if you listen to Transport is Arranged,
okay,
going right into Old to Begin,
yeah,
those it kind of is in between Transport and Old to Begin, and I feel like those are like way stronger songs. Like, and also those are songs where Malkmus is really starting to have his own voice, and it's like very unique rock. And I think those songs, since I heard Old to Begin is like 44 or 43, I think those two songs, Transport and Old to Begin, are better than Date with IKEA. So
wow,
I heard it here first, folks. For some reason, I'm feeling like the lack of cohesion of this album. Give it a shot. Listen to it without Date with IKEA. It's a different album, and it's an interesting choice by the engineers and the producers to put Date in between those two. I think it should be ranked lower. I'm sorry, JD.
No, that's okay. Everybody, that's why I asked the question.
Hopefully, Transport somewhere in the top 50. I think that's such a fucking rocker. And it's so heavy at the end. But yeah, I would put Date probably in my, a little bit lower.
Would it crack the top 50 still?
I don't think so. If I'm going to be completely honest, it's going to be in the lower 50, maybe 60s or 70s.
Okay. Wow. You heard it here first, folks.
Daniel still love it.
Chicago.
Still love it, though.
It's one of his children, but he just disparaged it. Daniel, do you have anything that you would like to plug at all? Is there anything that you're known for on the internet? Or?
Oh, let me tell you, I am a therapist here in Chicago. And I, as you can see by my many plaques on the wall, I'm trained to do psychotherapy in the western suburbs of Chicago. If you know anyone that wants therapy or wants to try it out for the first time, I specialize in anxiety, depression, addiction, and men's issues. So,
oh boy, I ticked a few of those boxes.
My greatest hits right there.
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking to you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. So thanks for that.
Thank you for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Wash your goddamn hands.
Thanks for listening to Meeting Malkmus, a Pavement podcast, where we count down the top 50 Pavement tracks as selected by you. If you've got questions or concerns, please shoot me an email, jd@meetingmalkmus.com.
Podcasts and such.